Hi, I'm Dan Cottrell, editor of Rugby Coach Weekly. You're about to jump into one of our podcasts. If you want to find out more about this podcast and also all of the great content, drills, activities, games and advice on the website, then go over to www.rugbycoachweekly.net. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
You know, supporting those individuals in a very unique way so they can play to their strengths more often. That's how I see us playing a more fulfilling role as coaches, helping kids reach potential.
Rugby Coach Weekly presents The Coaching Knife, where we cut to the root, cut out the fluff, and challenge the masters of their domain to cut to the chase. Hello and welcome to The Coaching Knife, where we cut to the root of the matter. In this episode, we speak to Grant Dorey, performance coach at Moby Coach Australia, someone who has a couple of passion projects, including rugby ATL, Queensland rugby, and supporting coaches in Australia rugby. Focusing on the power of purpose in coaching and life, we're going to cut to the root on how we can turn thoughts into action. Grant, are you ready for the knife?
I'm absolutely ready for the knife, Dan. A little bit scared, but I'm ready for the knife.
Okay. How easy is it to define your purpose?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's taken a while to get to where I'm at now. So as a young coach, I couldn't define it clearly. But now as an older coach, I think that inspiring excellence is my purpose.
Right. So if you say that, are we saying that only an older or more experienced coach can define their purpose?
No, not at all. I'm just suggesting that it took a while to uncover my own.
Right. How are you going to use that journey to help others?
Well, I think we evolve. And what I've noticed about my own journey is that different environments require different things from me as a coach. So my purpose has evolved accordingly. But your purpose should tell you why, should help you get out of bed and get excited about, why you're doing things. So, what I've ultimately worked out over the last few years that it's I'm really passionate about inspiring excellence in others and helping people be the best version of themselves possible.
Right. So both of those expressions are important expressions, but there's a danger, of course, they can become overused. So what is excellence mean? What does it look like for everybody? Because obviously, if you're at the top of your game, you're one of the best players in the world, we can clearly see excellence, but most of us aren't in those positions. So how can you be excellent and yet be, say, in the level 6 or 7 of a league system?
Yeah, I mean, I think excellence is a very individual thing. And for me, excellence is about performing as close to your potential as possible is individual excellence.
Right. So again, another expression is the potential. How do we know our potential? How do we understand that? And it will be interesting to take that, given your reflection on now it's easier for you to see your purpose. How does somebody who is, say, at the start of their journey or very early on in their journey understand their potential?
Well, I think potential shifts. The potential you might have as a young athlete, it could be very specific. You could be blessed with speed, or you could be blessed with power, or you could be stronger. You could be stronger, bigger than your peers at that particular time. But I think potential, it evolves as we grow. If you think about the pillars of a high performance athlete, physical, mental, tactical, technical, psychological, you've got potential in each of those areas. So my sort of take on potential is, or on my sort of my take on purpose is inspiring excellence so we can work towards reaching our potential in those 5 areas of the game.
So that sounds great in the sense of it's organized to do that. So how do you, first of all, recognize potential? So are you saying that obviously the individual needs to recognize it, but we're as the coaching group, we're trying to help someone understand that. How do you start that? I mean, I'm assuming the right words of the conversation. How do you start that conversation with the athlete or the coach?
I think what we often do when we get this wrong is we think that potential should be the same about in all of our young athletes. So we've got a framework of what a potentially a high potential young athlete should look like. And actually what we should be looking at is we should be looking at unique potential or unique strengths, which is sort of comes out in their potential. We should be looking at the unique strengths of individuals and then being, you know, supporting those individuals in a very unique way so they can play to their strengths more often. That's how I see us playing a more fulfilling role as coaches, helping kids reach potential.
So let's say you've got four wingers in your group. We're talking rugby here, but it could be taken across any sport. And obviously, one of the key things for a winger and for all players is speed. But the fourth best winger doesn't have as much speed as the other three. How are you going to help them understand their potential, given that probably the key attribute, well, one of the key attributes is not necessarily the best of the group?
Yeah, good question. And I think that we've seen there's many examples in the modern game where the fastest not winger is not the best. So I think that us understanding and helping players make good decisions under pressure, being able to see, you know, being able to support players to be better decision makers so they're seeing cues earlier, they're identifying opportunities earlier, so they make up for their lack of speed through anticipation, or they make up through their lack of speed through work rate. So I think that there's things we can do around game understanding and position specific support and development that can make up for a lack of speed.
Right. So let's turn this back towards purpose. So we can help maybe identify potential, and some of that potential is perhaps saying, yes, you don't necessarily have this, but you can have this. How does that turn into purpose? And you said, and I want to just talk a little bit about you used why and purpose. Are they inextricably interlinked, or are they separated? Why and purpose? Your why and your purpose.
Well, I think your why and your purpose are strongly interlinked. I mean, your purpose basically is the why you do things. My purpose is inspiring excellence. What my role as a coach is to understand the purpose of the players that I'm coaching and understand also the environment that I'm working within to make sure I understand the purpose of those people in that environment, because that's when my purpose can come to life and I can blend my purpose to create an overarching purpose that we all believe in. Because if I just turn up with my own, it's not going to be enough.
Yeah, so that's interesting that you say that, that you're talking about their purpose. Does their purpose have to align? And we're saying purpose here. But does their purpose have to align with people? Or does the team have to bend to them? How does that all fit together? Because a player comes, obviously, you're saying unique, you're individual, they're coming to the team. What do you have to do to maybe change their purpose? Or do you just build on it? Where do you go with?
Yeah, I think that what I've noticed, Dan, is that environments that can blend and uniquely understand individual purpose, but turn individual purpose or an element of their individual purpose, they turn into a shared purpose, that's when you can create the momentum of many getting behind one particular thing that drives people through common goaling.
Right. I mean, that sounds absolutely fantastic. And it's sort of like dreamlike situation that we're able to do that. So as a coach, how can you how can you make those things happen? Very in simple steps. I mean, and it's a very complex craft of the coach is to be able to do that. Where do you start that process?
I think you start the process by getting to know your players.
Okay, how would you do that? It sounds obvious, but are there obvious ways that you can do it effectively, which means that you get not shortcut, but you get there quicker than, say, just being there with them all the time.
Yeah, I'm a massive believer in meaningful moments of connection.
Right.
So meaningful moments of connection might be that if I spend 10 seconds with Dan a day, how do we make those 10 seconds meaningful? If I spend 10 minutes with Dan a day, how do I make those 10 minutes meaningful? I've got to try as a coach to have as many meaningful moments of connection as I can. I've got to try to get to know more. I've got to try and scratch the surface. I've got to try and understand what motivates. I've got to try.
Those meaningful moments, how do you make that authentic? Because the difficulty is that I'm going to say, oh, here comes Grant. He's going to go from those meaningful moments again. How do I avoid that sort of feeling of the coach forcing themselves into those situations?
Yeah, I think for me, the authenticity comes with the care and compassion of the person. So whatever you're coaching, whether you're coaching in a professional sense, whether you're coaching a rugby player, whether you're coaching a netballer, whatever you're coaching, is the person comes before the athlete. And I've found that if you can show a deep level of care and compassion and empathy on a human level, you can start to unscratch, you can start to scratch the surface.
How can you train? So an absolutely vital for coaches to do that. How can you train yourself or improve that? Because not everybody does that naturally. And what I mean by that is that you can care, but you can't necessarily embody it in the way that you want. You can't get those conversations right when you are less experienced. What ways can coaches use to make that a better situation, a better meaningful moment?
Yeah, but, and you don't always get them right. I'm not suggesting that experienced coaches get them right more than less experienced coaches. What I'm suggesting is that in my experience, if you can almost approach each interaction with the thought process that how can I build trust in this moment versus erode trust? How can I understand more about this person on a human level? How can I show them that I care?
Right. So let's just break that down into maybe an example then. So absolutely, I want to build trust with this person. What are the sort of a do and a don't, if you like, of how you build trust? What's the first thing that is going to make that person feel, ah, yes, here comes Grant. I know that he is going to be helping me, and I can trust that whatever happens from here is we're going to try and move ourselves forward, even if he's saying something which might be hurtful or might be difficult for me. I know he's coming from the right place.
I think one of the things I've learned over time is that timing and positioning of those conversations is critical. So something as simple as, Dan, I'd really like to find 5 minutes with you sometime in the next 48 hours. Here I am. Let's try and carve out some time. I've got a couple of things I'd like to discuss with you.
All right. And, so I mean, I love that because sometimes that player's not ready for that conversation, even if you're ready. So you're giving them, you're giving, okay. So that's, first of all, I like that. Carve out some time. Carving seems a really good word to use there.
Yeah, I think carving is a good word, but I mean, what it actually does, Dan, it gives the permission. So they give you permission to open the door to have the conversation.
Right. Okay.
Which is very different to an enforced conversation.
Right.
And the other thing I've noticed is that, how do you make it formal as well as informal? Okay. So informal moments of connection are fantastic. Just where you're connecting around the coffee machine in the morning, or you're sitting down at lunch and connecting with people, and you there's no agenda. It's just about getting to know each other. So it's about time and energy invested in relationships. It's the dynamic of the time and energy being invested in relationships. You don't always have something to bring up. Mm. That's when it becomes confrontational.
Yeah. So let's say you've come to me and we're going to carve out some time. I'm going to panic if you're the head coach, I'm a player, and not that ever happened. But let's say that my contract renewal's coming up in 5 weeks' time, and you say, Dan, let's carve out some time. I think, I'm not looking forward to this meeting at all. How are you going to make the person feel that they want to come to the meeting without them absolutely panicking about the next conversation?
Well, what you can often do is plant seeds to set you up for success.
All right.
You know, things like giving them a clear idea about what you might discuss and what you're trying to achieve in that conversation.
Give me an example then of how that sounds. So you've come to me, Dan. Can we carve out 5 minutes in the next 48 hours? Then what are you going to say to plant a seed?
So I might plant a seed. So look, we're both trying to secure what's going to be best for you and your family in the future. I think it'd be great if we spent some really intentional and deliberate time looking at what options we've got on the table right now. And then we can work towards making the right decision for you.
Right. Okay. So great. So that's the situation where obviously I'm thinking about my livelihood and that sort of thing. So let's dial that down into maybe a player is slightly underperforming or maybe majorly underperforming, but you really want to have a conversation with them. So what would that conversation sound like? So they would come to the meeting ready to be open to something at least.
You know, I think one of the challenges with any feedback cycle is, and you're talking about a feedback cycle here where you're giving a player some feedback, is that when the feedback cycles are fast and frequent and they're consistent, the players don't get shocked by the feedback. It's when the player only gets the feedback when he gets dropped that the feedback cycle is broken down and there's a higher level of trust being eroded between the coach and the player. So in my experience, if your feedback loops are consistent and, you know, you're having these conversations often, they are part of your ongoing continuous improvement. It's not just about, okay, Dan, you've had a bad game last weekend, we're going to drop you, this is why, bang, bang, bang. And then when you walk into the team meeting half an hour later, you're not read out on the team list. That's when you start to erode, you know, you genuinely start to erode the trust that you've got with any player.
Okay.
So they are the types of conversations that create massive issues in the culture of a team.
So in essence, we've got to be feeding back consistently, constantly, and they know that you're just continuing a conversation all the time. And also probably within those conversations, they're going to have a pretty good clue of where you're coming from. So they're not going to be shocked can be shocked by good news, but they're not going to be shocked by things which aren't necessarily going to be detrimental. Grant, yes, this has been brilliant, and I know we could crack on and delve into that anymore. So, but I'm going to stop there. Frustrating for you, if you could see his face now, you could see his frustration. Anyway, so Grant, before becoming a consultant high performance coach, he was assistant coach with Tonga, Italy, and the Japanese national team, technical advisor with the IRANZ, plus roles with pro clubs in France, London Irish, the Blues Super franchise, and. Well, it started out as a teacher and a director of school rugby in Australia. So his philosophy is relentless pursuit of short-term goals lead to long-term success, to inspire leaders and teams to develop rigor and discipline, striving for excellence in their daily habits, connects, engage, and empower people through coaching with various platforms and opportunities to influence. And we could definitely hear that coming across in our discussions. You can contact him on LinkedIn. So that's Grant Dorey, so Dorey, and directly at mobicoachnz@gmail.com. So that's mobicoachnz@gmail.com. And definitely he values human connection, so please reach out to him and chat. And we've had some great chats in the last couple of weeks, so that's been interesting too. So let's finish with some quick fire questions. Grant, how old are you?
55, I think.
Right. Okay. When this recording went out, he was maybe a bit older. Right. What coaching book is by your bedside?
It's not a coaching book, but it's a great book, Belonging by Owen Eastwood.
Yeah.
And it connects with me because I'm a strong believer in creating environments of psychological safety. And that is a great handbook to get people thinking about the power of belonging.
Yeah. And we're very lucky we had Owen on the Coaching Knife a month ago, and it's just come out, and it was brilliant to listen to. Definitely recommend that book too. What coach or teacher are you loving at the moment?
Just finished a book by Urban Meyer called Above the Line. Urban Meyer is an American football coach, and I just love the simplicity of keeping yourself accountable to above the line or below the line behaviors. So that's directly in line with my relentless pursuit of short-term goals.
Right. So just quickly, what's above the line and below the line? I know what it is in marketing, but I'm not sure what I know it is in coaching.
Well, above the line is, but if you think about the line being the line that builds trust or erodes trust, if you're above the line, you're building trust. If you're below the line, you're eroding trust. And that's basically the choice line. And it's the behavior line that you choose to consciously compromise on your values or to reinforce them when you're living above the line.
Which team or sport or subject would you love to coach at the moment?
I had to think hard about this one, and I'm actually going to say the Wallaroos. And the reason I'll say the Wallaroos is because I'm a massive believer in equality. I think that there's amazing things happening in female rugby, in women's rugby, girls and women's rugby. One of the best coaching experiences I've had as a coach was with the Japanese national women's team when I helped them through a sevens program back in 2009, 2010. And I think girls have, you know, got an amazing future in the game, and I'd love to support that their ongoing journey.
Who's inspired you most?
My dad. Simple answer, humility, family first, and sacrifice are the three things that I think about when I think of my dad.
What would you tell your 20-year-old self to do more of?
Understand the power of the mind. And I think mental skills remains to be one of the things that is both under-resourced and underappreciated. And I think that if we can practically teach the tools that can unlock the power of the mind for more people, we'll have more people hitting and understanding where their niche is and feeling confident and empowered by their own capabilities. So that's what I would have loved to see more of as a young man.
I think all of us now, you say that. Grant, that's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed what you had to say.
Cool, Dan. Thanks, mate. Appreciate it. I feel cut by the knife. Well, they say death by a thousand cuts, don't they?
Well, I think there was about seven or eight in there. Okay. Grant, cheers. Thanks very much.
Cheers, mate. All the best.